Expanding Mind with Eric Davis, Thursdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your co-host, Maja Daou. We'll be missing Eric Davis today. He's out, and we'll miss him dearly. But he'll be back next week, so it won't be too long. Today, we're going to be exploring a particular aspect of consciousness that is very intriguing to me, and something that kind of a lot of people don't really consider that much. And it's about conscious intention with eating and putting consciousness into food. You know, I always kind of think it's funny because everyone will talk about, you know, maybe like sports or things that you do like art and how your conscious intention will influence these art or music projects you might do, or even if you're a basketball player, how your kind of state of mind will affect how you're playing a game. But people don't really think so much about how that might affect what you're cooking. Like, let's say you had a really bad day and you come home and you cook dinner for your family, and you might be thinking some sour thoughts while you're cooking your food, and then, you know, that might kind of influence the entire dinner that you're feeding to everyone. And that's something that I think about a lot. And there was a while when I was doing a nutrition series and just thinking a lot about it, because I studied biochemistry and Chinese nutrition and Western nutrition and stuff like that, and I kind of thought it might be neat to do an interview with chefs around all these different restaurants and ask them what they were thinking about while they were cooking your food, because you don't really, you know, consider that sometimes when you go into a restaurant. You just kind of look at the food. But, I mean, what if the person that was cooking it was really kind of mean or in a bad mood that day? Then you're putting that bad mood into your body when you eat it. And I'm really excited about the show today because one of the people that I think has had a big influence on shaping a restaurant in Los Angeles that has really considered this to a high level is Astara Kalas. And she has been involved in a restaurant called Elf Cafe, which started up here in Los Angeles. And you can really tell as soon as you go into the place, so you can feel the vibe, not just when you eat the food, but it inundates the entire place. So I'm really excited to be talking to her today. Hi, Astara. How are you?
Hi, Maja. Excuse me, I have a bit of a cold.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. How are you feeling?
I sound a little funny. I feel great. I just sound a little funny. How are you doing, Maja?
I'm doing good. I'm so glad you could join us today. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so can you, like, maybe tell people a little bit about Elf Cafe and just introduce, like, how it kind of got started?
Sure. Elf was opened by my band. I had a band for many years with two other fellows. And we had this opportunity to open a cafe. We really wanted a place in the neighborhood that served the kind of food we like to eat, and there wasn't one at the time. So we sort of banded together, if you will, and opened a little place that served vegetarian food, organic, happy cheeses from local farms, used produce from farmers markets, local farmers, wholesome ingredients, just, you know, things we like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
It started out actually as a raw food business. My partner, Scott, started a raw food business in the space that Elf is now, called Back to Life.
And oh.
They package food out of the space and sell it to all the grocery stores around Southern California.
Hmm.
Raw falafels, raw hummuses, and that's still going on, but, we had the opportunity to open a cafe in the same space, and we took it.
Wow. So it was like a decision that you guys kind of made as a band that was making music to then kind of extend that into the food that you guys were eating.
Yeah, it seemed really easy. We were going to just put the band on the shelf for a minute and open a restaurant and then get back to the band, but that actually never happened. And 4 years later, here we are, you know, still running Elf, which is great. We're really lucky and we're really grateful for the space.
Well, it's just an amazing place, and the first time I went in there, I mean, it's just so overwhelmingly potent. You can just feel the kind of good vibes when you go in, and, you know, some people aren't that sensitive to it when they kind of go into restaurants, but I think for me, I can always tell when I go into some place, you can feel if it's a drag, you know, and how happy the people are that work there and stuff like that, and... I mean,
you know,
maybe
we're a family. We love what we do, and it's like our living room. That's how we think of it. And we're basically throwing a little dinner party every night, and people who come, they're just coming into our home.
It's really what it feels like. It's palpable.
Yeah. I mean, we call everyone company. That's for company. Don't need that. It's for company.
Pretty good. And I know, like, there's been items on the menu there before when I've gone in to eat where you guys will prepare them kind of like with, you know, a specific idea that day. Can you, like, are there any of the menu items that you can think of off the top of your head that stick out in your mind that you guys really just kind of worked on together with a kind of conscious intention?
Well, yeah, we worked on the whole menu together. It's based on the climate of California. It's basically similar to the Mediterranean, so we decided that it would be a mostly Mediterranean menu. And just all around the Mediterranean, we have Lebanese, Greek, and Spanish delicacies because we're eating for our climate and what we have available and what we can get at the farmer's market that day. And so Mediterranean food seems easy, and also vegetarian food is easy through Mediterranean recipes.
And were you guys all vegetarian? Did you make the decision to make a vegetarian restaurant based out of something, your guys' beliefs, or was it just kind of something that happened?
Well, yeah, we started out, actually Scott started out as a raw foodist. And we went from there. He's not one anymore, but first of all, I didn't want to give in to the whole idea of serving meat. We didn't want to contribute to that. I meat eaters get offended sometimes when you talk about being a vegetarian, and not to be preachy, but we just didn't want to give in to that.
Yeah.
That whole idea of serving meat. It's easier not to serve meat. We don't eat meat. I don't want to give in to serving meat to anyone. I mean, there's plenty of restaurants that do it, and we didn't really need to do it.
Yeah, it's tricky because, I mean, there's all kinds of political issues that come up, and then, you know, people do it with certain agendas and stuff like that. But, I mean, really, the history of vegetarianism is pretty interesting to me. So I always like to ask people, you know, why they might choose vegetarianism, because usually people have reasons, and I know that running a restaurant, I mean, that's a pretty big decision, but I think it's great that you guys just all are vegetarians, and that's just the way that you do it. So, of course, that's how your restaurant would follow.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's all through love. It's all through compassion, wanting to support local farmers, just wanting to support our neighborhood, and just serving the food that we really like to eat. We don't
give
any
fake
meat.
Yeah, you guys are very community oriented. And have you guys had a pretty good response, like from the local farmers? Do you find that everyone is pretty supportive of you guys?
Yeah, we have a really great relationship with the local farmers, and we do go to all the farmers markets and that are happening around the neighborhood every day, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's really wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience to just build those relationships and be able to serve food that's fresh and freshly grown that day. It's wonderful.
It is, and it's rare. I mean, a lot of places you go and you don't even know where the food came from, if it was fresh that day. You know, I mean, a lot of it just gets shipped in, and that's why I think it's really interesting that you guys do it by climate, too, and seasonal, because it is this thing with food where people get food from all over the world that gets shipped and irradiated and stored, and all kinds of crazy stuff happens to the things that they put in themselves, not even counting from the people that prepare it, but from all the people that handle the food, from picking it to shipping it and everything. It goes through so much it goes through this journey before it makes it to your mouth. So I love the idea that you guys have that central focus of having what's available and seasonal and, like, specific to the area to give to people.
Well, I mean, that's how it should be. Our bodies are actually connected to the climate, and they're connected to the land we're living on. And so it goes without saying that we should be eating the food that's in our neighborhood and in our general vicinity. It just goes without saying that we're connected to it, the pollens and the energies and the land, and we should just eat that food. I mean, it's convenient too. It's logical to really eat that way, you know, because it's convenient. It's part of the community. I mean, we do get our spices from the Middle East or something like that, you know, we should all just be eating locally.
It is. It's really quite a strange thing when you think about it. I was thinking about that at the grocery store when I'll see, like, fruit from Chile or something, you know? And
yeah.
I mean, you know, that's just how it goes. It's part of the food industry. But I always think, well, what is the journey that this, like, plum from Argentina or Chile took before it got to that spot in the grocery store? And most people don't even consider that. They just kind of go in and pick whatever fruit is there in front of them, and they don't think about, like, maybe what has the ordeal that this food item has been through before it kind of reached that spot.
Yeah, that poor little plum just got on a truck and got on a plane and came all the way over. And I know. But it was easy for us, too. I mean, it was all just, it wasn't something that was thought out before we opened the restaurant. We like going to the farmer's market, and it's the food's, you know, not sprayed or it's organic, so it's just easy to go and get food that's doesn't have any chemicals or poisons on it and just bring it to the restaurant and cook it up.
Yeah.
It really wasn't like a plan to say, okay, we're going to have this only serve, I mean, we were going to only serve organic, but the farmer's market was a second thought, too. We were like, oh, that's perfect. You know, we can just drive to Glendale and get our food today and bring it in and cook it up.
Right. Well, and it's interesting that you say you guys didn't think about it, because it was literally what you guys were already doing, and it was part of your practice. And that's what, like, to me, is very interesting, the relationship that you guys have to each other and how it kind of came about. And I know that you had mentioned that you guys were in a band. And I was just curious, like, because you guys are all such amazing individuals, like how you kind of have that kind of same frame of mind. And when you all eat together in the same way, like, to me, that's because eating together, breaking bread together, is like one of the mainstays of bonding experiences, right? I mean, throughout history.
Yeah.
Sharing the hearth and the food in a community, like, really is kind of this big deal. I mean, you can look at all the references to it in the Bible or any culture that you want to pick, and it really kind of helps formulate a culture. And so it's kind of interesting that you guys all came together as individuals and literally kind of formed a culture around the way that you eat together. Was that, did it just kind of happen organically, or did you guys discuss it, or, like, what kind of happened there?
Well, you know, we've always been creative together. We've always had various bands, and we've toured, and we've made records together, and so definitely we've always eaten together. We shared the same space on several occasions, just living in a house together, and in creating something and then presenting it to the public, I mean, whether it's through music or food, it's similar. You know, you have your intent behind it, and how you want just what it's part of you, how you want to be perceived and how you want that to go out into the world. It's just like creating art is creating art, you know, whether it's food or music or painting or anything. And we just happen to do this as a collective. So, I think that, you know, the music we made was, always had an intent with it. It was always, we were always really into expanding the consciousness and diving deeper into that. And so it just sort of naturally went into the restaurant that we made together. And, creating a space that, holds a, creating a, I'm so nervous talking to you actually. Creating a space that holds our intent was just sort of a natural occurrence from being a band, you know, and throwing a show at any club around town. Just like we would create an atmosphere. Even in our music, we always had visuals and just, it was more about creating an atmosphere than just like giving you our song. So Elf totally just turned into that on its own. Honestly, it was just, there was so much thought, so much non-thought that went into opening that restaurant. We just were like naturally going, yeah, okay, we'll just do this and we'll just serve really good food and this is how it's going to be. And didn't even think about the environment kind of translating like it was, like it would be for a show.
Right.
Or performance or something, but it really is very similar.
It kind of is. Like when you go in to have a meal there, it's like you're participating in a performance, which might sound like a really weird thing to do.
Yeah. You know?
But like cooking is this ritual act, and it's almost like you are participating in a performance when you go in to eat in a restaurant where someone is performing the ritual of cooking, and then you partake of it literally by taking it into yourself.
Mm. You know? Exactly.
And it is.
Exactly.
It's like,
not just going through your ears. It's actually going through your mouth and into your body.
Yeah, totally. You know, and I always think about this when I was doing research on it, and I was actually researching, like, vegetarianism and kosher and stuff like that, and there's this quote from Jesus in the Bible. I can't remember the part of it, but he's, like, with his disciples, and they're eating some food that's not really kosher, and then they don't wash their hands properly. And so this local Jew, like, gets really upset and kind of chastises him for not washing his hands properly and being kosher. And what Jesus's response is that it's what comes out of a man's heart and not what goes into his mouth that makes him unclean.
Ooh.
I know, I always really like that quote. And I think about it because... really, like, there's some people that can eat, like, even poisonous stuff, or think, like, some people can eat the same thing that will totally poison someone else, like, they might get food poisoning, but then another person that ate the same thing won't get it, and it'll be, like, this weird kind of thing that happens, and I think it's kind of has to do with the frame of mind a little bit, like, is the only explanation I can think of, like, almost like the placebo effect scientifically. So, I mean, I think you're right. It's literally having this imbuing penetration into the person's body, like not just with their ears or their mouth, but it's like going into every level of them.
I mean, absolutely. I definitely think it's the person's... I've seen that happen before where I was totally poisoned by... and my friend had 3 bowls of it, and he was totally fine. And I always...
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy because it's all consciousness and it's all, you know, it's all your thought. That's the thing about creating a space too, like a restaurant. You have to think about the things like the walls and the chairs and the wood. Like Scott built everything in the space by hand, so it was a labor of love.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he everything, the bar and all the screens that are in there. And so just the walls themselves sort of have this love in them that still sort of makes you feel loved when you walk in the door. Just sometimes the chairs and the benches and walls need acknowledgement that they're there.
Mm.
And they help you create a space that's loving and safe. And when people walk in, they feel that way. I know
it's really true.
It sounds crazy, but I'll acknowledge the walls, I'll acknowledge the tables and thank them for what they do, for for us and serving the people and, you know, not falling apart.
Yeah.
They're getting kind of old and rickety.
When you make stuff, it's like, yeah, you said, like when you make anything, whether it's food or, like you said, the environment. I mean, you go into most restaurants and, like, all the furniture and everything in there has been built by a machine on a factory line. Like, someone didn't make it with their hands. I mean, obviously, there's exceptions where people do that on purpose. They'll make everything, you know, and set the environment just like you guys. But for the majority of places you'll go into, everything in the place was made by a machine, not by a person.
Yeah, and, you know, we couldn't afford to buy fancy chairs, and we had to make everything. So,
wow.
But I came across, I feel really, you know, I'm thankful that he is such a talented force. I mean, he also cooks all the food, too. He's such a talented force, and that love is in the whole place. It's in all the tables. It's in everything.
It is. I mean, you just feel it when you go in. I mean, so let me ask you this. I mean, I know for me, I feel that when I go in. Have you guys ever, like, had a big fight and then, like, it will influence the restaurant? Like, do you feel that extension of you guys penetrating your environment like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, of course, you've had big fights.
Right. That happens to everybody.
Yeah. We're like siblings, you know? Yeah, we've had big fights, and it's definitely affected the night. Like, the whole place is sad.
Oh.
You can feel it, and, you know, we'll probably get a bad review on Yelp that day or something, because somebody walked in, and they're like, Elf wasn't the same as it was the last time I went in, and I know exactly what day they were talking about, because we'll have had a fight that day or something.
Oh,
I keep a lot of sage on hand, you know, just... to stage the place, try to clean out the arguments and stuff, but...
Well, no, I mean, I worked as a waitress, you know, and this is another reason why I think about these things is because I worked in restaurants before. Like, most of the time when I was a teenager and stuff, I would get waitressing jobs, and even when I moved to L.A. for the first time, I was waiting tables, and you could really... Restaurants are a really good, like, microcosm of culture and, like, how people interact, I think, because it's, like, it's just overwhelming when you pay attention, all that stuff that comes out. But I would remember when there would be days, like, when, say, the boss was, like, a jerk to someone in front of everyone, and
yeah,
then it, like, would penetrate the entire staff.
Yeah, and it trickles down to everybody.
To everybody, and every dish that would go out that night would be, like, weird, and everyone would be unhappy, and, like, the customers would be mad, and it would literally start from that one action at the beginning of the night and then infiltrate the tone of the entire evening.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want that to go into the food ever. You know, I would never want anyone to come in and have to eat any arguments or anything. So I think... I do certain things to sort of, on my own,
yeah,
sort of change that. I just kind of clear the energy of the space. I do it a lot, actually.
Hmm.
Clear the energy of the space and fill it up with light again. I don't think anyone deserves to come in and have to eat an argument, so.
Well, and that's
what rarely ever
happens. That you do that, and a lot of people don't think about that, and because I think about it, you know, because I have a family, and so whenever I kind of, no matter what kind of day I had, I try to just take a moment before I start to make dinner and kind of, like, think about the fact that now I'm making dinner and this is what I'm doing, and just even thinking about that and trying to clear it out makes a huge difference. Like you said, like, it makes the difference of either feeding someone an argument or, like, you know, cleaning it out and making sure that you're starting from a kind of clear slate, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing, Maja. I think more moms should do that. I think all moms should do that. I wish my mom did that. I wish my mom would have done that. I think it's important to, when you're cooking something, to think about what you want it to do to the, I mean, you're setting an intent. It's all energy,
yeah,
and it's all vibration. I think you want to set an intent to what you want that to do. You want it to be delicious. Or when I make soup, for example, I always think of soup as kind of a nourishing, loving thing, and I just sort of put the intent in my soups that it just sort of warms people up from the inside and makes them feel safe.
Yeah. Well, there was one night when I went in, I remember, and there was, you guys had an aphrodisiac soup.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to tell folks about that a little bit? Or
yeah,
is that
I must have been feeling, I was feeling fancy that night, I guess. That's right. I put a bunch of, I put a bunch of red Arabic spices in the soup, and it was red. It was tomato and peppers and sumac and Aleppo and what else? Cinnamon.
Mm.
It had some cinnamon, I think. Yeah, and that was an aphrodisiac soup. It was an experiment, sort of.
Totally delicious.
That intense in that soup, rather than being like grandma's soup. But did it work?
Right.
How'd it go?
Oh, it was really good.
Did
the trick.
Okay. Wow. Maybe I'll make one. I'm going to make one again tonight.
No, and it's funny because that is one of the mainstays of occult ideology, really, and kind of esoteric. Whenever you're making a spell, really, right, is that you can do it with plants or teas or lighting a candle or whatever, and a lot of people don't really think about doing it with food so much, but that you can have like that magical cooking where really you can, for good or ill, kind of influence people by making the preparation in that manner, you know. And that also, like we were talking about earlier with clearing yourself before, that means that you kind of, if you're preparing food for people, you kind of are taking on a responsibility.
Yeah, and I feel that way too. I feel really responsible for only the best intentions to go into the food. And it's just, that's just how I've always lived anyway. And I just, I set an intent for most everything I do, so why wouldn't I do it when I'm cooking food or making this restaurant and even making like a tea for somebody or something? It's just, you just have to put good vibes into it.
Yeah, there was this one kung fu movie. It's a Stephen Chow movie, and it's called The God of Cookery. He's the guy that did Kung Fu Hustle. I don't know if you've seen that one, but this movie, it's kind of like about Iron Chef type of stuff where they have like a competition on who's the best cook, and the main character goes through all these things as a chef that he like integrates with Kung Fu, and he figures out that it's his Kung Fu consciousness that inundates the food, and he kind of comes to this low point, and he's given a meal by this woman who cooks it out of love and kind of like gives it to him for free when he has nothing and he's totally poor. And it was just this really plain, like, bowl of rice with vegetables, and it was, like, not fancy at all, but that she cooked it and gave it to him out of compassion. And then he started, like, crying, and he said it was, like, the best food that he had ever eaten. And this is someone who had, like, eaten all this fancy stuff. And then he ends up winning the competition by learning to place that same compassion into the food. And I just, that movie is so important, I think, for that kind of idea that it's not about like all this frilly, fancy stuff, but it's like that kind of conscious intention that you can place the compassion into the food when you're making it.
That sounds like an amazing film, Maja. I want to see that.
It's really good. It's called The God of
Cookery.
It's called The God of Cookery.
The God of Cookery. Wow.
Yeah. And it's really
amazing.
Funny, too. We're going to take a little break here and listen to some messages from the Progressive Radio Network, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network. Listen to Of Consuming Interest every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Jim Turner, attorney in Washington, D.C., chairman of the Board of Citizens for Health. Every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, we discuss a topic of consuming interest, often about health, but also about politics, commerce, and whatever the current topic of the day might be. Of Consuming Interest, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
Mm-hmm. This is Bill Bowie.
And this is Kelsey Flynn.
Of Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability.
We bring you news and interviews
with the likes of Wangari Maathai, Bill McKibben, Hazel Henderson, Paul Hawken, Francis Moore LePay, and many others. Tune in to Sea Change Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network on Saturdays at 7 in the evening.
Stephen Lindman hosts the Progressive Radio News Hour, Saturdays and Sundays, as well as currently on Thursdays, as an antidote to government and corporate propaganda on the most cutting-edge world and national topics. Distinguished guests are regularly featured to provide commentary and analysis impossible to the dominant media, offering biased, irresponsible misinformation and what Project Censored calls junk food news. The Progressive Radio News Hour is Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as well as Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Make it a regular habit and stay informed.
Hi, this is Mike Fader. I'm doing a new show here on PRN every Thursday following Gary Null from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. It's called The Turning Point. What will we talk about? Well, everything from birth to death and most things in between. I'll be using stories in the news and personal observations from my own life. And from time to time, I'll be taking your calls. So please join me, Mike Fader, every Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point on PRN.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to Expanding Minds on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Mazda Daou, and we're lucky enough to be speaking with Astara Kalas from Elf Cafe here in Los Angeles, California. And, Sarah, you had been talking to me a little bit about another project that you've been involved in, which also relates to kind of inundating things with your consciousness and vibration. And I know a lot of people kind of shy away from using the term vibration, but for me, it's all about frequency, so it's the best word I can come up with. And you've been doing a kind of project called Liberate Elemental Forces. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yes. Vibration is actually the one word it does have a kind of a cliche, but Liberate Elemental Forces is just a physical sound bath project that started in before the restaurant in 2006, but it's morphed into a sound bath sort of band. Our day prep guy, who started working at ELF when we opened, happens to be a 30-year trained tabla player, just randomly. And Evan, who's one of my partners, plays sitar. And they've been playing together since we opened ELF, so it's really a perfect sort of synchronicity. And we join in. We've got some other people in the band. We join in with synth, and I use solfeggio frequencies to create a sound bath for everyone who comes. And each show sort of has an intent that we set before the performance starts, and we let the sound carry the consciousness to where it needs to go. Like we did one for the Gulf spill. I had everyone gather and visualize a beautiful clean ocean. And then we had the sound bath and used the frequencies and sent that off into the world.
That's so amazing. So it's literally like a concentrated gathering where everyone will have the same kind of, like a prayer in mind, and then you kind of send it out through the music and through the audience that's there?
Yeah, everyone participates. To me, it's sort of a form of peaceful protest that we're not really allowed to protest anymore, so
I know.
I don't want to get into that, but we're not really allowed to protest anymore, so it but we do have our consciousness, and our consciousness is always free. So we can think what we want, at least for now. And to me, that's the way I can do my part to get, you know, to make a change in the world, you know, just to, like, if you gather enough people together, the vibration gets more and more intense and more strong, then you can send that off into the world where it needs to go. And I don't know, I spent so many years just playing music and playing my songs at people. I wanted it. It's, to me, it's a form of service, and I'm just really into service right now.
Well, it absolutely is, like, without question. And, I mean, I always think there's this line in the Bible that says, where two come together in my name, I will be there. And that's, like, God talking. Like, whenever two or more people with a conscious intent on, like, you know, having some spiritual stuff happen come together, he's like, I'm there. You know, like, if you just come together and think about it, like, that's how it's going to happen. And again, like, that's one of the mainstays of, like, kind of every occult esoteric idea is doing that and performing that service. And when you mentioned it to me, it reminded me, I don't know if you've ever heard of Dion Fortune.
The house, yeah.
Yeah, so she was like the famous witch from the Golden Dawn, right? And she started something called the Brotherhood of Light. And she would literally have not only people come together like in a group, but even like she had like a letter network where she would send out notifications on like what time and what people were to focus on. And this was during World War II.
Amazing, so, really. Wow.
Yeah, so she would, like, have her kind of Brotherhood of Light network, and she would send out a letter to everyone and say, okay, we're going to focus on, like, sending love and light to the Nazis at, you know, on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Everybody do it. And so it kind of reminded me of that a little bit, and that's, like, the kind of grand nature of what your project kind of sounds like to me.
I read this book. Have you read a book called Power versus Force?
Oh, that's the David Hawkins one?
Yeah, the David Hawkins book. I mean, it's pretty scientific, but he proves, I mean, that how much a radius can, like, how many people gathered and how far it actually can project your vibration. And such a small amount of people could affect this entire neighborhood, maybe 10 people gathering together. And it's actually been scientifically proven for all the people who think that's crazy, you know, that this really does work, and there is a collective consciousness.
It's the 100 monkey thing, you know?
Exactly, yeah. So I don't know why more people, we should all be doing that right now.
Yeah.
we should all be sending love to, you know, freaky governments. And I wanted to do another show for this new bill, the S-510, that is really upsetting me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think our next show will maybe be to try to knock that one off. I don't know. It's just, I'm not saying it's working or not working. I just feel like it's what I can do. But what we can all do is just gather together and vibe somewhere, so.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most powerful things that you can do, I really think. And the Dion Fortune, there was a book about it called The Magical Battle of Britain, which is like a really good title. But it talks about in there how they would kind of like execute it, you know. And I think that what you're talking about is just like the best thing we can do is just come together and think about that and kind of change our minds and set our minds on what we think, you know, what we want to send out. And your idea of just sending love out to them is so good because, you know, I'll talk to a lot of people and they just get really upset about what's happening, like for a bill that's going to pass. They just get mad and then they, like, hate these people that are doing it and then they get, like, all conspiratorial and fear-mongering. But when you think about it, then it's like putting the bad vibes into the food, right? You're like poisoning what you eat by doing that.
I mean, I think they're trying to make us upset, too. I think they want us to get all upset and agitated because it takes us away from the truth in ourselves.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can be doing that, actually, and it is our power. That is where our power is.
That's exactly true. And I mean, to me, it's the same as like the food thing. Like just the idea of saying grace before you eat, you know, like you can have a plate of food in front of you and like in esoteric cultures, they would believe, like, as long as you bless the food and kind of say a grace over it, it could even be like some crazy gnarly poison, and as long as you kind of bring God into the food, then it's like safe to eat. But if you curse at the food before you eat it, like, some people will eat something and say, I shouldn't eat this, this is really bad for me.
Yeah, that happens all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah, so then guess what? What you're eating is really bad for you.
Yeah, and you know, I'm always caught between that dilemma too, because I've gone raw a bunch, and then while I'm raw, I say to myself, well, it's all energy, so if I just bless my food, I mean, it's going to be healthy no matter what I'm eating.
Exactly.
I've always gone back and forth between that, and I really believe actually that if you just put love into the food, it's going to bring love to your body, even though I've done a crazy raw food so much lately.
Have you been doing raw food, like, recently, or are you, like, do you kind of cycle in and out of it?
I do. I cycle in. You know, it's hard having a restaurant and being raw with all that delicious food around. It's, you know, I'm really grateful that I have all this food that I can eat when I want, and then sometimes I just go totally raw just because I'm really into the vibration of the raw food. It makes me feel good.
So you
honestly.
Can you actually feel a difference in your body, like when you switch from raw to cooked food?
You know, I do. I do feel a difference, and it could just be psychological. It could just be me saying to myself, which I've always, you know, had this dilemma. I could just be saying to myself, "Well, it's raw, so I'm going to feel good now." You know, I always think about that. But it does make me feel good, so, and it is nice. It's nice for energy purposes when you're running a restaurant to have a little extra energy.
Well,
but,
it is,
know,
and I mean, that kind of
food vibrates. Sorry, the food vibrates at a higher rate. I've seen the photographs. You know, you see this photograph of a cooked piece of broccoli and a raw piece of broccoli, and it does actually have a more vibrant glow to it. I don't know if you've seen the photos.
Oh, like the kind of aura photos that they do?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty marked. It's, like, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's crazy, too, because, like, Eric and I were talking on a show a little while ago about kind of, like, the beginning of the end, and a lot of people put it to agriculture, you know? Like, there's the whole Ted Kaczynski thing where he thinks, like, the kind of downfall of civilization started with agriculture, and you think about cooking food and growing food, and that's like that kind of where control of nature takes over. I mean, you can, like, people would be like, oh, come on, like, give me a break. But really, like, the whole start of fire and cooking are related to each other in that way, when it is kind of man's creation starts with making fire and cooking the food, and then that's like our way of, like, as soon as we do that, then it's like a departure from a natural, if you can use that word, kind of state where animals wouldn't kind of do that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there are some cultures that just ate berries and fruits and were very healthy people.
Yeah, I know, it's really kind of strange to look at how...
Veggies.
What's that?
Nothing. Keep going.
No, it's true. Like that, I mean, you think about raw food that way, and that, you know, that's kind of like what we ate before we started the whole fire cooking thing, and it's kind of interesting.
You know, when you go raw, you kind of notice that you don't need as much food as you thought you did, which is it's an interesting sort of exercise in your own mind-body experience when you just eat, let's say, like a cucumber, and you're satisfied by eating just a cucumber for lunch or something, or just like an apple and a cucumber for lunch, or you just snack all day on these really simple things, and you start thinking, well, I thought I needed this big sandwich, and I don't need it. I still feel great just eating these vegetables.
Yeah. It's really weird, and in fact, like, I've done some studies of fasting and stuff like that where it doesn't make any sense, right? You think you need food for energy, but then you can actually fast for, like, 7 days and have tons of energy, even though you're not taking anything in. Like, that's always crazy to me.
I know, and I see. I love what your mind goes through when you do that, because you just you learn a lot about yourself and the way you think about what you're doing, and I think it helps you to be more conscious when you are eating if you do fast a little bit.
Yeah,
it's just, it wakes you up a little bit, and I don't think fasting works. And I think in our culture, I mean, it does a little bit, but in our culture, it's really difficult to be so pure and raw and. When you're surrounded by, you know, people eating, inviting you out to dinner and eating all these great meals and stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that, but a little bit of fasting helps you to be aware of your body and appreciate what you're doing to it. And
it's true, and that, again, speaks to the whole thing with food and culture and things. I mean, just pay attention to what happens when you go out and eat with your friends and or even drinking. Like, I know I've gone through periods where I don't drink anything at all, and then, like, all my friends go out and drink, and then everyone gets kind of bummed out on you if you don't drink. And the same with, like, food. Like, if you're fasting and you go out to eat with people, they get really sad.
They do. They feel offended at you a little bit.
They do.
But, you know, sometimes the most spiritual experiences are had when you drink tequila all night with your friends.
Yeah.
And just dance and have fun, and you wake up feeling really as magical as if you had gone on a meditation retreat sometimes. Like, I think experience is it's all spiritual, you know, just eating food with friends, eating dinner with friends is just as spiritual as going on a fast.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, if the intent's in the right place, it makes you feel better sometimes, you know, and that's what I've noticed. Just enjoying something with someone, it's all energy.
I mean, I think that some of the most nutritious and nourishing meals in my life have been the ones that have, like, lifted my spirit from just being with people I love, and it didn't really matter what we were eating even. You're right, it was about that kind of group experience of the event, not even necessarily the food that everyone was eating.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have Thanksgiving with your family and everyone's arguing or something. And then you think that Thanksgiving food is terrible. You have an amazing Thanksgiving with your friends and something that you host a big party and it's an amazing Thanksgiving, you know, and you ate tons of food and you feel amazing. So I guess, you know, that goes back to ELF. We serve tons of food, but I have to say that, like, our portions are huge and we serve tons of food, but it's all with love, and it's there's nothing in there that's strange, and there's no government poison in there, and it just all goes down wonderfully, I think, and makes people feel good, and I'm grateful for that. I have to say.
Is there a particular meal that stands out in your experience in ELF that was just, like, unbelievable? Like, is there any one that you can think of that was just, like, unbelievable and crazy and magical?
Well, I think that Scott, you know, he was a former big meat eater, and so he does really amazing things with mushrooms and oyster mushrooms. Like, he gets these big, crazy king oyster mushrooms, and he makes, like, calamari out of it.
Wow.
Which is amazing. It's so he's really good at replicating something he really loved to eat, but not using anything fake, like soy or tempeh. Mm-hmm. Not use any fake meats there. It just makes amazing. So things like that really stand out. But also, I think our family meal time stands out. We have family meal at the end of the night where we put out a lot of leftovers and things, especially on Sunday. It's a big buffet, and sometimes friends come by and just eat for free, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After. I don't want to put that out in the world, but it got out of hand for a bit. But yeah, I think having that time to share inside the space and just having everyone come and eat all our leftovers has been really special. I don't know have you ever been part of a family meal, Maja?
Oh, yeah, totally. And
have you?
Not your guys's, but like there's other places I've experienced things like that. I've been at Elf when it has like gotten late and closed down, and but I for some reason I don't know. Maybe I didn't know that was going on, but I have been there after hours when you guys all just kind of, you can feel like everything kind of shift, and not like you guys aren't open anyway, but then it gets even more just like, you know, just totally open, and you literally feel like you're a part of the place and a part of everyone that's there. Like it's hard to explain, but I felt it before.
Oh, good. I mean, you're always welcome, Marsha, to family.
Always
welcome.
Do you want to tell people, like, I don't know if you get, do you guys have a website and maybe let people know some of the nitty-gritty in your schedule and stuff like that?
Yeah, our website is elfcafe.com, and we're in Echo Park.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be on Sunset, 2135 Sunset Boulevard, just a little bit west of Alvarado. We're closed on Monday and Tuesday because that is the raw food. Those are the raw food days. And just dinner only. We open at 6:30 and we serve till 11 p.m. So Wednesday through Sunday, 6:30 to 11 p.m.
That's great.
And
if people
make
wanted
reservation.
To learn about the Sound Bath Project, do you guys have, like, a website for that, too?
I don't really have much. I have my blog that I post shows on, and that's Astara. Astara Calis, calas.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the blog that I just put our shows up on when we're going to have one.
Do you guys have one coming up, you said, maybe? Or you don't know what the date is?
I don't really have one actually set right now. I do want to do one for that bill, but
I think that would be a good idea.
Oh, shoot. You know, maybe I can organize it next week or something, and I'll let you know, Marsha.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. I mean, you guys, when you do that, just everyone that's listening, if you're interested, you can go and check out her blog. And do you guys ever record any of the people, or it just kind of is the experience in the moment?
Yeah, actually, there's some stuff on YouTube, and it's, I think you Google LEF Live, and there's some... Because it all just happens spontaneously. There aren't songs. It's all really free form. So, we have recorded some of those moments, and I hope to get them out one day. But it's not really about that. It's more about, you know, just being there and in the moment, and whatever sound comes out is what happens. So, a few of those are captured.
Well, that's so neat. I mean, I know what you mean, just having it be like an event in and of itself, and it's always interesting to me to be able to kind of peek in on some of those things, because it's like, it's amazing how you can still feel the vibes from stuff like that when people are doing it with conscious intention. Like, I know there's been lots of even musical performances I've seen that just go into that kind of magic level, and even watching it on something crappy like YouTube, it's weird how it still kind of translates, you know?
Yeah, it's the tabla player's son, actually. He's so cool. He recorded it, and he made a little channel for us, so he's been recording our shows. So, yeah, and you can kind of get the gist of what we do, but it's better if you just come and you participate, because that's more important, I think, just to put your vibe in there, too. We want everyone's part of the band, you know, that when we do that, so.
Yeah. Did you guys ever have anyone just, like, mean come into the restaurant that just bummed everyone out that you had to, like, kick out?
Yeah. Actually, yes. I kicked someone out once. I feel terrible saying that, but he was so mean.
Oh.
We've had some people that have just made everyone in there miserable that I've just been like, dude, come on, you're making everyone miserable. Just go.
That's how you dealt with it. You kind of just asked them to leave. Did they go, or did they, like, were
yeah,
they mean?
They do. Yeah. It's only happened maybe once or twice. I usually let mean people stay and give them love, you know, because they're there for a reason.
I know, right?
Yeah, so, but if they do actually upset everyone around them, I feel responsible. But this only really does, it never happens. It really doesn't. And if someone's cranky, it's my challenge to like try to make them happy, you know.
Well, it's true, and I just thought of it about that because even like waiting tables, you know, someone can bum you out all night if they're mean to you when you're serving their food. And so I was just thinking about like you guys get that from the other end, like where people just give you bad attitude from the get go, and if like kind of how you guys navigate that.
It's really, I think like they must just be having a bad day and it's their problem. But I mean, they're also in my reality for some reason, so. I think about that. I just forgive myself. I'm really into Ho'oponopono.
You're into what?
Ho'oponopono.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know what that is, right?
Yeah. Can you tell people about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a form of Hawaiian shamanism that everything that is in your reality is your fault, basically, which is not a bad thing. It's amazing because you can forgive yourself if you see someone fighting across the way. It's basically in your control to forgive yourself for why that's happening.
Hmm.
You say, "Forgive me, I love you, I'm sorry, thank you," to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if someone cranky comes in and I'm in the dance with them for some reason, so I forgive myself for it. It usually works, you know.
It's so good because most people just kind of say, like, why is this happening to me? What did I do to deserve this, you know? It's kind of most people's way of when bad stuff happens to them. That's, like, the number one thing that everyone says first. So I love that kind of philosophy because it integrates it into part of your reality. And you're like, okay, this is actually happening to me. And, like, let's kind of integrate it and deal with it instead. So that's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it just makes you it makes you feel better. It's kind of a logical thing to do. It's not just because it makes me feel better to say, okay, this is in my control, so forgive me, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I just do it because it makes me feel better when someone's really bumming me out, you know?
No. That's all. That's a good note to end on, I think.
Yeah, okay.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much, Astara, for coming on, and that was a great, great conversation.
Thank you so much.
Guys, if any of you are interested, go check out Elf Cafe and some of the Liberate Elemental Forces. Thanks for joining us today on Expanding Minds. Keep your minds open.